This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. The Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Awards were put on hiatus this year. The statewide nonprofit Indiana Humanities has taken over the contest and is turning it into more of a book award rather than an award given to an author for their body of work. Indiana Humanities will announce more details on October 21st at an event in downtown Indianapolis. For some context, we're going to look at the rich history of Indiana literature right now with senior editor of the Indiana Historical Society Press and Indiana Authors Award recipient, Ray Boomhauer. Good afternoon, Ray.
Glad to be here.
And we're glad to talk
about Indiana authors.
So glad that you're here. And we're also joined by Megan Teligman, Program Manager at Indiana Humanities. Hi, Megan.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And, of course, we would love to hear from you. If you have questions or comments about the history of Indiana literature or about support for Indiana writers, get with us on social media. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Ray Boomhauer, let's first talk briefly about the Indiana Authors Awards. In their old iteration, which was around from 2009 to 2018, you won the regional award in 2010. What did that mean to you?
It meant a lot to me. It meant recognition for what I had accomplished with my work in biography, featuring notable people from the Hoosier State. And it gave me some kind of a cachet, I think, with people around Indiana who were happy to hear from an Indiana author who won such a esteemed award as the Indiana Authors Award. And it gave me a chance to go out and talk to people all over the state, at public libraries, at local historical societies, at writers' groups, to talk about the craft of writing and really to gather their stories as well and see what they were working on, which helped me in my own job at the Indiana Historical Society, picking up some authors for our Traces of Indiana and Midwestern History magazine.
I feel like it's going to be a theme this hour that we talk about writers helping writers. Why do you like to do that?
Because it's a way to pay back, so to speak, with all the help that I had during my own writing career. You know, I was encouraged early on by a gentleman named J. Kent Calder, who was the first editor of Traces magazine. He saw something in me, encouraged me to do some articles for Traces, and that led me into not only doing articles but a number of books about Indiana history. And so you're kind of trying to pay it forward, so to speak, with the help that you got during your career.
There's advice, which is specific, and then there's just encouragement. Both are important. Which is more important to you, or was more important to you when you were first getting started?
I think encouragement, just the fact that someone thought I had some kind of talent in this field, and someone was interested in what I was doing and wanted to see me succeed in my work. And I think that encouragement is always great. And also having opportunities to see your work published. And Indiana has a lot of that in as far as authors go.
Of course, the old award was more or less given for a body of work. Often, though, it was marked by a significant recent work at the same at the time that the award was given. What were some key parts of your body of work up to the point where you had been given the award in 2010?
I think the key work was my 2008 book on Robert F. Kennedy's campaign in Indiana in 1968. And that brought together a lot of material about not only Indiana history, but the history of Indianapolis and our country as well. You know, 1968 was quite a turbulent year in United States history, with the death of Martin Luther King Jr., and then later on in 68, the death of Robert Kennedy following the California primary. And to go back and see what role Indiana played in all that, I think was an important part of my opus of work, and I think that's what really got me the award.
Megan, we'll talk more about how the Indiana Authors Awards have changed later in the program, but what about that? You weren't really involved under its old iteration, but I imagine that one of the challenges of awarding an author for their body of work is it's a lot of material to pore over, right? I'm sure that they won based on their reputation as well, the authors who have won. But was that a factor in the shift from that kind of an award to what it is now, more of a book award?
Yeah, I think so. The body of work method was fantastic. It gave people, you know, real access to authors that were very established. But bringing in some fresh voices and additional genres was a priority of ours. So we, Indiana Humanities, we want everybody in the state to read, think, and talk. That's our mantra around the office. And so we really wanted to find ways for anybody to pick a book, read an author that they love. And that means children's books, that means young adult books, genre novels, horror, sci-fi, romance. We want something for everybody. And so by transforming it into a bit of a book award, it's giving us an opportunity to come away every 2 years with a list of the best books by Indiana authors that really anybody can look down that list and maybe read Ray's new biography of Harrison, but also, you know, pick out a young adult sci-fi novel as well.
Yeah, so attaching something specific that someone can pick up as opposed to just saying, hey, check out this author. And then you got to do the work of looking through their work and things like that. But now you're saying, here's a book.
Yeah.
Read this book.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little easier that way.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Ray, you've been a member of the Indiana Historical Society for more than 30 years, so I'm glad that you're here with us for this segment. When was the so-called golden age of American literature?
When you're talking about the golden age of Indiana literature in particular, we're talking about the time period of about 1880 to 1920. That's a period of time when Indiana enjoyed quite a success in having its writers appear on bestseller lists. Nationwide bestseller list. But you really think of the big four when you think of the golden age of Indiana literature. You have George Ade, the Purdue-educated newspaper columnist who later won fame for some of his plays. You had birthday boy, James Wickham Riley. Happy birthday, James. I hope you're toasting with with your friends wherever you are. And, of course, known for his poetry. You have Booth Tarkington, the famous novelist of the Magnificent Ambersons fame, and Meredith Nicholson, which Indiana Humanities knows quite a bit about because they're in their home. That's where their headquarters are, who's probably known best for his romantic thriller, The House of a Thousand Candles. But there are quite a variety of writers that have been from Indiana over the years, and I think we're still in our golden age, actually, that we still have quite a plethora of writers out there who are producing quality work in Indiana.
How are today's generation of writers trying to live up to that reputation of those four and others?
Well, it's a more variety these days, not only as far as, female writers, male writers, kids writers, all different kinds of genres are being covered. You have poets, you have dramatists, you have nonfiction writers, you have biographers. And so I think the key thing about Indiana is there's just a variety of outlets available for these authors to see their work published. You have academic presses like Indiana University Press, Purdue University Press, Notre Dame Press. You have small regional publishers like the Indiana Historical Society Press. The old Gill Press of Indiana is now turned into Hawthorne Publishing. You have a variety of magazines available. And so having these avenues to have your work published is just really encouraging for any kind of writer, because if you're a writer, you want to see your work in print for people to read and enjoy.
What was the Western Association of Writers? This was a group that was founded in Indiana?
It was founded from Indiana people who thought that the Midwest wasn't getting the recognition it deserved, which is often a complaint of writers from this region, that we're kind of losing out to the East Coast. James Wickham Riley was a particular thorn in his side when he was trying to get his work published during his early days. And so when writers get together, they always form these organizations, it seems. And the Western Association of Writers had its heyday during that golden age of Indiana literature. They had a number of conferences. Riley was always the big draw. If they could get Riley to attend the conference, they'd have a good crowd. And they often had these conferences up in the northern part of Indiana. So we had a key role to play in these organizations. Unfortunately, it faded out but others sprang up to take its place.
Well, what did they talk about at these conferences when Riley would be there? What would be the focus, I guess?
Sharing poems, reading what they had written. It could be short stories, it could be short plays, it could be poetry. And, of course, just sitting down and listening to Riley tell stories is entertainment in itself.
Imagine so. I would love to be a fly on the wall at that.
Indeed.
Megan, right now, spelled W-R-I-T-E, A Celebration of Indiana Literature, is an event being held October 21st at the Indianapolis Arts Garden. Can you tell us a little bit about that event?
Yeah, so we're kind of kicking off the newly redesigned Indiana Authors Awards in Style. So we're inviting people to come out, hear about all the changes, meet and talk with authors and avid readers. We'll have some opportunity for some, you know, hands-on poetry and poetry on demand, and just an opportunity to get excited about all of these changes that are happening to the awards, but also all the programs that will come alongside this initiative.
Which authors will be there?
Oh, I want to keep it a little bit of a surprise.
I know there's some reveal that's associated with this event.
Yeah, it's a little bit more of a meet and greet, I would say. So I think we're inviting authors to come out, and we'll have opportunities for you to purchase books there too. Indie Reads Books is helping us out. And so you'll have a lot of face-to-face interaction with authors and then a lot of opportunities to find your next Hoosier read.
Well, I'm excited about the event on October 21st. Ray Boomhauer is senior editor of the Indiana Historical Society Press. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Spoiler alert, I will be at the event.
Ooh, how about that, Megan?
Yep, yeah, he's spoiling it.
Sorry, Megan.
Megan, we'll hang on to you for the rest of the show, if you don't mind. Ray is the 2010 recipient of the Regional Indiana Authors Award, and that's what we're talking about today, the new Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Awards, which Indiana Humanities has taken over and will now be awarding every 2 years. Megan Teligman is with us. She'll stick around and we'll welcome 2012 winner Barbara Shoup next to talk about current efforts to help budding Indiana writers. If that's you, you'll want to stick around. Readers as well, of course. We'd love to hear from you. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Before we get back to our show on the new Indiana Authors Awards, remember, each episode of All In is available as a podcast. So if you missed one, like the ones we did last week on Indiana's leaf-gazing tourism, or the one we did with Tom LoBianco, who wrote Piety and Power, Mike Pence and the Taking of the White House, you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Back now once again with Megan Teligman. She's the program manager at Indiana Humanities. We're also joined now by 2012 Regional Indiana Authors Award recipient, Barbara Shoup. Good afternoon, Barbara.
Good afternoon to you.
So what did it mean to you to win the award in 2012?
Well, libraries kind of saved my life. So, you know, to get an award that was coming at that time from the Library Foundation and you know, just to be recognized by my community, it's a wonderful thing.
What do you mean by that, the library saved your life?
Well, books saved my life, and books were at the library, and they didn't cost anything, and I could go, and I could have as many as I wanted at any time. And I, you know, I'm not a person who had a particularly happy childhood. I'm not a particularly happy person by nature. So I found that, you know, reading was an escape and made me more curious about the world. It made me want to travel, and it made me think.
The best readers start out as writers, or the best writers start out as readers, rather.
I personally don't think you could be much of a writer if you didn't read.
What did you find yourself reading when you were a reader before you became really a writer?
When I was a kid, I always read about happy families, and you know, which was not necessarily a good plan. You know, it wasn't that my family was so terrible; it was just that I felt like I wasn't happy enough. You know what I mean? And so I would read these things about happy families. Like, oh, I wish my family was like that. I read the Laura Ingalls Wilder Little House on the Prairie books, and I would read books over and over again that I loved.
I do the same thing. Yeah. Sometimes when I pick up a book that I've already read, I'm like, should I spend the time or should I? I'll just do it.
Well, it's like the difference between seeing a new friend and seeing an old friend. You're going to maybe pick the new or the old friend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You've done a lot of different work, novels, poetry, short stories. I hate to put you in a category, but what would you say is your specialty?
I'm a novelist.
Novelist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that long, messy process and, you know, the way novels evolve. You don't really have any idea what you're doing, and it takes a long time. And I don't like starting things, for one thing, which I know is sort of a dumb reason to like novels. But, you know, with a novel, it takes me a long time. So I always know what I'm coming to when I come to my work, whereas if I'm writing poetry and short stories, which I haven't done for a long time, it's, you know, it's a whole different kind of way of thinking about discipline and subject matter and what have you.
You're also the writer in residence with the Indiana Writers Center. You're the former executive director.
Right.
Tell me what the Indiana Writers Center does.
The Indiana Writers Center has been around. This is our 40th year, 40th anniversary. We offer classes for people who want to write, people who are just beginning, people who are already writing and want to get better. Our classes are all taught by published writers. Many of them are professors around town of creative writing, wonderful writers themselves. And so, you know, you come to the Indiana Writers Center for a class, and it's not going to be academic or intimidating. You're going to get a slice of something. You know, a person is going to tell you his or her slant on character or setting or memoir poetry or something like that. And you're going to come away with, you know, some insight into craft, and usually they're writing intensive. So you'll have something that you did in class that you can develop. So we have those single session classes, and then we have some multi-session classes. I just started teaching a class, which I'm really excited about because I haven't had time to teach while I was, you know, had the position of executive director. So my new situation allows me to get back to teaching, which I love. So this is a 6-session class that'll probably keep going, and it's called The Long Thing. And it's for people who are writing, you know, a friend of mine was working on a novel, but she was afraid of it. And so you couldn't say, how's your novel coming? You'd have to say, how's that long thing coming? And she'd say, oh, okay. So it's called The Long Thing.
I can totally relate. You talked about process a little bit ago. And some people, myself included, when it comes to sitting down, especially if you're talking about something long form like that, I myself am not an author, but I do a lot of writing for work and for a number of other things. Mm-hmm. And I love doing it. But I write shorter form things, you know,
yeah.
A 30-second radio promo here and there. It's a little bit easier to start and finish something like that.
Yeah.
When it comes to process with a novel, it just seems like such an undertaking.
It's a big fat mess. I mean, it really is. And it's one of the things I love about it is it takes your whole head, that, you know, you have to open it up and allow it to evolve and be organic. But then sometimes you just have to stop and look at it and say, oh, my God, what is this? And, you know, you apply the other stuff in your brain in terms of, I mean, I use spreadsheets, I use highlighters. I just love that part of it, the going back and forth, and one thing triggers another. It's a very long process that demands a lot of patience, and I'm not a patient person in my real life at all, but I am very patient with that because I think I'm just so fascinated by it.
Do you kind of have to boss yourself around, say, we got to get 10,000 words down?
No, today. I never do word count.
Okay.
No, I write slow. I write slowly. So I try to write every day, at least a little bit, and I don't worry about page count because I can't control that. I mean, if I said 1,000 words, I could be there all day and still not get it, you know. So I don't do that. That does work for some people, though.
Well, while writing isn't a career for everyone, I think that writing is something that everyone should or at least could try.
Absolutely.
Simply just because it's fulfilling. What would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the people who do it for joy are the lucky ones, whereas some of us who are, you know, trying
dependent
to
on it.
Publish our work and be recognized for it, it's a lot of hitting your head on the wall because there's just, you know, I always say to people, there's no ladder in the arts. You can, you know, if you want to be a doctor, a lawyer or something, how hard you work, how smart you are, there's a way of predicting how well you might do. But in the arts, some of the best writers I know have never had any recognition at all. Mm. And I think that's really, it's something you just have to accept. It's just the way it is. And you have to do it because you love it. And I'm not very good at all that other stuff, you know, the promotion and what have you. But, you know, we really believe at the Writers' Center that everybody has a story to tell. And so, you know, while we do programs for people who know that they want to, you know, that they see themselves as writers or they see themselves as people who want to be writers, we also do a lot of programs for people who don't, who are scared to death of writing and don't think of themselves or have any ambition. So we, you know, we do memoir projects. We have had projects with homeless women, women veterans, victims of domestic abuse. And what people say is, I mean, it's amazing to see the trust build up. You know, we'll do 12-week workshops or something. And the way those workshops come together and, you know, people start saying more and more and more really honest things, writing more and more and more really honest things, and they're not afraid. And I mean, I really believe that if you're writing and this is true for me of fiction as well as nonfiction, that whatever hurts you, whatever questions, you know, you can't answer and you know you'll never be able to answer, when you write honestly about those things, something happens. You either gain insight that you haven't had, or there's some sort of weird thing where the heaviness in your heart goes to the page. You know, your heart is not as heavy. You haven't solved the problem. You may have some insight, but you feel better.
You worked it out.
Maybe you worked it out. Maybe you just got it out.
Maybe you just got it out.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And then we also do, which is one of my favorite things, a summer learning program called Building a Rainbow. And it's with we go to 3 sites in Indianapolis summer camps, and we work with about 200 kids, and they write about their lives, which is, you know, heartbreaking and wonderful and hilarious. I had a kid, we did a little evaluation, and I thought this was hilarious. He said, I didn't like anything about writing except for the snakes, only he meant snacks. You know, and then other kids will say, I love writing, I love the Writers' Center. But we have college interns, and the kids love the interns.
Hmm. Back to the memoir writing. Yeah. I always thought that there should be more memoirs written by non-famous people.
I agree. And it's especially true now because we don't write letters anymore.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, historians are not going to have that cache of letters that people leave behind to learn about daily life. And that's what these memoir projects are. It's people's day-to-day lives, what they're afraid of, what they love, how they spend their days. And it's absolutely fascinating.
Megan, part of the work that Indiana Humanities has done is the work of connection and support. Who do you aim to connect?
Yeah, we want to connect Indiana readers and writers for so many of the reasons that Barb just kind of witnessed there. So, you know, we want children to see value in writing. We want to connect younger writers or early career writers with more experienced folks to kind of get that that background that Ray was talking about earlier, that support and encouragement from maybe more established or more well-known writers. So we want to make connections within the writing world, but also between readers and writers. So one of our, I think, favorite programs around the office, we've called the Novel Conversation Speakers Program.
I love that program.
Yeah. And so we've been running this, even though we weren't administering the Authors Award, we sent the winners of the Indiana Authors Award around the state to libraries, schools, historical societies. We had a few programs take place in Indiana prisons or at nursing homes as well. And so just that face-to-face interaction between a person living and writing in Indiana and their readers is really special. And it lets people hear stories that are inspired by the places that we live. And I think that's a very powerful thing. And it also inspires people to maybe tell their own stories, like I said, for all the important reasons that Barb kind of outlined for us.
We heard from Literate Indy on Twitter, who says that there are 3 books currently on the bedside bookshelf. Mm-hmm. Janet Flanner, nice. Rachel Peden, and Emily Kimbrough.
I don't know the last one?
Mm. Did I say that right? Rachel Peden?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I've got Janet Flanner on my bedside, too.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Which one?
Biography, and I actually have a stack of them because I'm kind of researching. I'm really interested in her right now.
What are some general principles or tips that you give to aspiring writers? We heard from Ray Boomhauer in the first segment who said encouragement is maybe more important than advice. But there have got to be some some lines that you got to stay in. If someone wants to dive into writing, where do they start?
Well, first you have to know you're not going to get it right the first time.
Of course.
And you have to believe. You say, of course, but people don't know that. I mean, they really, truly do not know that. I was doing a thing with some fifth graders not that long ago, and I was having them free write. And I said, don't erase. Just let it come out. And this one little girl was having a really hard time. And I said to her twice, don't erase. And then after I said it the second time, she started writing like crazy. And I said, what happened? And she said, I just realized I could fix it. And, you know, then she was able to write. And so I think that not expecting a perfect thing the first time is probably the most important. And I'm, you know, I have a teaching background. And, yeah, I believe that encouragement is very important. But I think craft is more important. Mm. And I think that people who want to learn how to write need to understand that there is a craft and that they need to learn it.
I think when it comes, though, to someone who has shown that they have a knack for craft, that encouragement.
Encouragement is great. Yeah. And what I love to do is I just love to connect people. You know, so if I come across a writer and I think that writer is really good, I will do everything I can to find the right place for a piece of writing or, you know, I mean, I can't do it all that often, but every now and then I can. Or I like to put writers together, you know, people that I think would benefit from each other's feedback. And it's a big pleasure to me to, I guess it would be encouragement. Some people would probably say that what I am giving them is encouragement, but I do like to give it with the idea that it is hard and it's supposed to be hard and, you know, sort of get used to it.
Indeed. Why is it a great time to be a writer in Indiana right now, Barbara?
There's a lot going on. There are things going on all around the state. Of course, I'm most familiar with what's going on here. The things that we do in addition to classes, we have a gathering of writers every year in the spring, and we bring in wonderful Indiana writers to teach sessions and to do a keynote. So there's, you know, there's that. I think we are in a couple of weeks doing the Meet an Author, Be an Author. I don't know if you know about that with the Central Library. We've been doing that. We actually did it in conjunction with the Author Awards, but the library is going to keep on. So that's coming up on November 9th. Poetry is just crazy right now.
Yeah, it seems like that world is getting really interesting.
It's wonderful. There's a group that meets at Irvington Theater, Iconoclast, and at Hoi Polloi, which is near Rabble. Poets Attack, I love that. That's at Irvington Vinyl and Books. Poets of Lawrence, Brook Street Poetry, Free People Poetry, which is Adrian Matika, at Central Library once a month. And it's a great time. It's a great time.
I'll ask you the same question, Megan. What's special about this moment in time for Indiana writers?
Yeah, I'll echo Barb's point about the poets that are working here right now. I think you're seeing it nationally, but there's this resurgence of poetry for many reasons. I'll give a few. I think it's a very responsive form, and it allows us to process our emotions at a moment that emotions are running high for various reasons, but it's also a really visual format, so it lends itself well to social media. So you're just seeing like poetry Twitter and poetry Instagram, and we have so many amazing poets within our state with great leadership from Adrian Matika, our current outgoing poet laureate, to really bring the poetry to the people. It's not this kind of arcane, difficult to understand or interpret thing anymore.
It is this. I love what he's doing.
Yeah, it's this living way of speaking to community and creating community, especially with all of the groups that Barb mentioned.
Let's get back to Meet an Author, Be an Author.
Sure.
Who have events like this helped? Any big names that have kind of started to make things happen?
No big names. But a lot of people who want to write and perhaps can't afford classes, this is a free program. So, you know, they come and they have the benefit of doing classes with Writers Center instructors. There was a couple of years ago, there was a woman who took one of the publishing sessions and ended up getting advice from the person who led that session. It was Nancy Baxter, who's a wonderful, very experienced editor and also a writer. And she ended up, you know, publishing her book. So writing is funny. It's a quiet thing. And there aren't that many people who necessarily make a big splash with what they do. That's pretty rare. But we have had a lot of people be successful in beginning to publish their work.
Have you ever had anyone who just has zero interest in writing as a career but just wants to do it for the sake of writing?
Absolutely. I would say that the majority of the people that come to us are that way, that they writing – sometimes, you know, they wrote in high school and college and they just got away from it. So we get a lot of people who are retired and older and they want to get back to it. And even younger people who just – it's missing for them. And they just want it as a part of their lives, as a way of processing their lives and – and I think they like the connection with other writers. I think I said this before. There, you know, nobody knows what it's like to be a writer, but another writer, and so it's good to be around each other. You know,
she's the writer in residence with the Indiana Writers Center and the 2012 regional recipient of the Indiana Authors Awards, Barbara Shoup. Thank you so much for coming on All In.
My pleasure.
Up next, more with Indiana Humanities Program Manager Megan Teligman, and we'll learn about the new Indiana Authors Awards with Indiana Humanities President and CEO Kara Amstutz. Plus, your questions and comments, keep them coming on social media. What have you read recently by Indiana authors? Who do you know in Indiana literature? Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. Stay with us. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about Indiana literature as Indiana Humanities takes over the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Awards. We still have program manager Megan Teligman with us, and we're now welcoming Indiana Humanities president and CEO Kara Amstutz. Good afternoon.
Well, thanks for having us, Matt. This has been a great discussion so far. I have really enjoyed hearing from Ray and Barb and Megan, so...
And Barb's still with us.
Yay.
And so we'll keep talking to her about process and other things. And again, we'll take your questions and comments on social media. Have you read anything by Indiana authors lately? Are you yourself an aspiring writer? Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. So first, let's talk about how Indiana Humanities came to take over the Indiana Authors Awards. Kara, there were no awards held this year. This is a period of transition. Were the awards in jeopardy and Indiana Humanities just kind of stepped in? What happened here?
No, actually, the awards were never in jeopardy, but I think the goal of transitioning to Indiana Humanities as the engine behind them is that we are a statewide organization, and we had been working in partnership with Glick Philanthropies and the Library Foundation for the last several years to get, as Megan was talking about, writers all across Indiana who had won the award in front of audiences, and we were a natural partner as the Glick Philanthropies folks wanted to grow the award to reach even more audiences and more readers around the state.
And Megan, the awards used to be given for an author's body of work, and now the new approach is a book award, and we talked a little bit about why that is. You care to elaborate any more on that? We talked about how it gives people, it points people to something specific that they themselves can read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're really excited about this aspect of it. We always say our biggest friends are libraries. We work very closely with libraries all throughout the state. So after every award cycle, and we've done this with past programs and themes that we've worked in, but every library in the state will get a kit with bookmarks and posters and stickers to put on the winning books to kind of encourage engagement. And we've, you know, the surveys we've done of Indiana libraries thus far, librarians want to be better advocates for Indiana authors. They just don't have the resources to do so or don't know who's here in writing. So we're really excited to give libraries the tools that they need to help promote this kind of book list that will come out every 2 years.
Victor on Facebook says he writes books on leadership. How do leadership or management or business authors fit into the awards and events in communities like this in Indiana? The groups and events that he's attended have been great, but they don't really seem to offer a niche for people like him.
Yeah, that's a great question. We do have a nonfiction category. That's the great thing about kind of expanding the awards to into these genres is that it allows us to consider some books that maybe weren't seen in the past in the same way. And we're also just trying to be a mouthpiece for Indian authors to get the word out about, you know, what they're doing with events like Meet an Author, Be an Author, and others, like trying to connect people to those resources and also use our social media and other tactics to get to spread the word.
Kara, how many people are reading books these days?
You know, we were chatting a little bit about that the other day, Matt, weren't we?
we were.
Not as many as we would like. Some of the recent studies that we've seen show that maybe as few as 25% of American adults have not read a book in the past year, and many are reading less than they used to. And so one of the things that we know about reading is it's important to people. It's important to their personal growth, and it's important to community. Barb has been very articulate today about how reading and writing can bring people together. So we know that this is incredibly important. And, you know, when you're even in casual conversations with friends, I hear all the time, gosh, I wish I had more time to read. Well, we're going to hopefully help by adding some things to the reading list and finding more opportunities for folks to connect and, you know, hopefully enjoy Hoosier writers.
I think my issue when it comes to reading is that I just read so slowly. I chip away at it a little here, a little there. It's just discouraging sometimes to see the same book on my nightstand for weeks, often months at a time. Do you have any tips for readers for reading faster, or maybe just encouragement for people like me? At least we're reading something.
Well, you know, maybe you just need to change your form.
Like
maybe poetry is for you, Matt.
There
maybe
you go.
Short stories. Maybe, you know, a little nonfiction.
I have found myself
graphic
reading
novel.
Graphic novels.
Graphic novels.
Right.
It still counts, right?
Absolutely. To me, audiobooks count too.
Yeah.
And you might, you know, like I do that in the car all the time.
Yeah. I mean, you've got this big block of time. You might as well use it. You can't really read a book.
Right.
Maybe we could take some tips from regular readers. Everyone's attention's fragmented. When are people reading these days?
Boy, I don't know. Megan, do you have any data that you're aware of on
question.
That?
Well, to your previous question, I was going to say join a book club.
I was thinking that.
There's your accountability,
yeah,
right?
That's right.
Accountability and community and all of these great things, you know, there are these really niche book clubs all over the place where you can find someone with your very specific interest that wants to read with people. And we don't have a chance to do that as much as adults, right? We don't have these opportunities outside of a classroom or a college campus to do that kind of work.
Indiana Humanities has a great resource for those of you who are currently in a book club or maybe thinking of starting one. So we have a free program called Novel Conversations. It's a lending library for book clubs. So imagine you look online and you choose a book from our collection. You sign up for a specific time and we will deliver it to your nearest library free of charge. You read the book and you return it. So again, free service. So you have no excuse now not to get that book club started or to refresh your book club with something new that might be exciting.
Who among us is doing a better job of finding time to read? I've heard older Americans are reading more than younger Americans.
I think if you look at the statistics, that's typically true. I mean, I think older Americans, if you're retired, you may have more time to read. But again, I think there's so many demands on our energy right now with social media, with, you know, just all of the distractions of life. And we hope that by offering more of these types of programs and supporting people like Barb and Ray and others who are creating space for readers and writers, that maybe we reclaim some of that time that's spent in chaos and return to, you know, something that's a little bit more reflective and can give us all what we need to handle life.
Yeah, and just to kind of add to that, you know, the percentage of people reading books is going down across age groups. But there's a question, too, of like, what are we reading? Some statistics show that younger people are actually reading more than previous generations because of social media, that we are actually consuming more and more words. So it's kind of a question of what. People are still reading in different formats, but, you know, are they reading poetry or short stories that are posted online, I think is an active question, and different types of storytelling, too, through video and such things. So
I've read about the implementation of a rock star tour for winning authors. That sounds pretty cool. What will these rock star tours look like, Kara?
Well, again, we want this to be a truly statewide experience when we are celebrating our authors. So the Rockstar Tour is modeled after something that we actually piloted last year with U.S. Poet Laureate Tracy K. Smith. So she came to Indiana, and we took her to four cities across the state where she gave talks and interacted with readers and writers, gave workshops, and was truly celebrated by the people of Indiana. And we know that there is a hunger for this kind of programming around the state. I'm from a town of 1,000. We don't even have a library in my town. We're in one of the library deserts in the state. And I know that regions like mine are always excited and eager to be able to welcome an author to our community. And the excitement that we saw for Tracy K. Smith was palpable, and we really want to replicate that.
Let's go back to process, Barb. With writing, there's a lot to learn in the way of skill and form, but inspiration and imagination, those less tangible skills are so important as well. Where do your best ideas come from?
My life.
You write what you know.
Well, no. I write what I don't know about what I know.
Okay.
So I will get interested in
some. That's an interesting way to put it.
Well,
I like that.
I didn't make that up. Someone else said that, but I can't remember who, but it wasn't me. Not me first, anyway.
Disclosure. All right.
Yeah. Full disclosure. I think we all have material, and our material is all of the stuff that shaped us as young people. And as we came out at sort of the end of that, the questions that were left unanswered at the end of that, and that can never be answered because the only interesting questions are the ones that can't be answered anyway. And so, you know, I think what most writers do is, you know, sometimes you'll say, people say, well, you know, they keep writing the same novel over and over. And it's true. If you look at a person's body of work, there are maybe three or four issues that they keep revisiting in a variety of different ways. You know, in my case, a relationship with my dad is something I never have quite been able to get a hold of. And so, you know, I've got stuff that is kind of closely personal. And then I've got a novel that's set in the 1600s, Vermeer's Daughter, that's about a little girl and her relationship with her painter father. So, you know, you're looking at the same things, only you're looking at them sideways. And I think that that's where your stuff comes from if you're brave enough to, you know, to grab it and do it. And you know, you have to learn the difference between a good idea and your good idea, that, you know, what might seem like a great idea, but it doesn't have any of that stuff of your own in it, it's probably going to be flat. So I have this new book, and it's called A Commotion in Your Heart, which I think is a pretty good description of what writing is for me, a commotion in my heart. And it's just a series of small, sometimes I think they're funny anyway, moments where I learned things. I wasn't trained as a writer. I don't have any education formally as a writer. And so I was, you know, just like a blind person tapping my way through trying to figure out how to do this. And I taught and I learned a lot when I had to explain things to kids. I mean, I would have these moments and the kid would be looking at me like, what is she talking about? And I would say, a clear sentence. Okay, it's like fractions. You know, you get it all the way down, the least common denominator, and you can't go anywhere else. That's what a clear sentence is. And then I'd go, oh, my God, that is what it is. And he'd go, okay, I get it, you know. And so all these kinds of moments that, to me, where I had the little light bulb go on. I remember going to hear Kurt Vonnegut years ago at Butler. It was when you could still smoke, and he would chain smoke and put the thing out in the chalk tray. And, you know, he was just so funny and such a curmudgeon. And some kid asked him, he said something like, well, I guess you know what you're doing now that you've been doing this. And he just, you know, he took this long drag off of his cigarette, and he got that look on his face with those baggy eyes. And he was going, now, if I knew what I was doing, why would I do it? And I thought, oh, thank God, you know, because I didn't, that's the way I felt. And I thought that I was wrong. So, you know, you have to learn these things. If you have a good teacher, you're lucky. But you also, you know, you have to learn them in a visceral way where they just enter you. And the way you do that is by just doing it, you know, trying and failing, talking to other writers, getting out there and doing all that you can do. But I love the creative process. It is an absolute big fat mess, as I said before, and I could talk about it and read about it and learn about it forever.
Does it take a lot to ramp up? I had a professor in college, an English professor, and she did a lot of academic writing, a lot of like sociology, that kind of thing. And she still explained her creative process as I remember she said, all right, so I'll walk around the kitchen, I'll put the dishes away, and she'll put on. It's had this long, ridiculous process.
To get there,
just to get to the point where they felt comfortable writing.
Right. Well, you know what? I believe that all writing is creative writing because it's a creative thing that you do. You know, what you've got, the subject, and whether you're doing – if you're doing nonfiction, you're going to write it in a way that nobody else did. You know, you're going to put the pieces of information that you've uncovered together in a unique way because you are the person who you are. So – I don't see a whole lot of difference, to tell you the truth. I mean, if it's good writing and you know, good nonfiction writing or memoir writing or creative nonfiction or whatever you want to call it, what makes it strong and compelling is that underneath it, it's Scott Sanders, or I think it was Scott Sanders, who said an essay is the story of your thinking about something. And so you begin and you have this thought and then you go through all this stuff and you come down on the other end and you either feel the same way or you think differently, but it's the story of how you think about it. And that energy of you trying to figure it out is what makes a work of nonfiction, I think, resonate and makes you keep wanting to read it just as you want to keep reading a novel. I mean, it's history, philosophy, all that stuff. It's all creative in the process of getting it down on the page.
Let's talk about reading. Megan and Kira, what are you reading right now? What's on your nightstand?
Well, I recently finished Ross Gay's Book of Delights, and if you haven't read it, you should. It's terrific.
I love it. Mm-hmm.
And I'm reading Paige Lewis's Space Struck, a book of poems that just came out.
Back to the poetry thing.
Mm-hmm. we are all smitten with poetry right now. So it's.
I guess poetry to me, we talked about the sort of the vibrant world of poetry. It seems to me like it often gets overshadowed by prose in any conversation we're talking about, where we're talking about reading or writing. Why should we be paying more attention to poetry?
I mentioned some of the reasons earlier, this kind of immediacy of it. And for people that don't have a lot of time to read, which is also something we were talking about earlier. I mean, it gives you
It's a little more bite-sized.
Yeah, it is. Right. You can read a collection. I mean, I would say if you're reading poetry, well, it takes as long to read a collection of poetry as it would a novel. But you do get to break it off in different size chunks, which is very nice. And there's just a lot of variety in that, too. Like, you can pick up an anthology and read from all sorts of different experiences. Or you can stick with one author and kind of dive into their thinking on a subject. There's a lot to go with there.
And I also think, too, that poets in poetry, especially if you think of different versions of poetry, slam poetry, et cetera, it's just such a social and such an impactful genre. And it's happening all over the state of Indiana all the time from young people to older writers. And it's a great way to think and be challenged and express yourself and to build community. So
in the last minute or so that we have, let's talk about the event on October 21st.
Great. First of all, it's free. Free event, October 21st, 4 to 6 p.m. at the Arts Garden. What you will see is the full unveiling of the new Indiana Authors Awards. You will also be able to, on October 21st, start nominating great writers like Barb and Ray and others for the awards. So that will be very, very exciting. And as Megan mentioned earlier, there will be lots of opportunities to engage with authors. There's going to be a pop-up bookstore. But again, free, 4 to 6 p.m. We do ask that you sign up, though, because we want to make sure we have enough snacks. We always have good snacks.
Back to the snacks, Barb.
There you go.
President and CEO of Indiana Humanities, Kara Amstutz, thank you so much.
Thanks, Matt.
And Indiana Humanities Program Manager, Megan Teligman, thank you for taking the time with us today.
Thanks.
Barb Shoup, thanks for hanging around.
I'm glad to do it. Love to talk about writing.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Our show is engineered by Adam Gross. If you would like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Join us next time. We'll be talking about the White River. Pollution has long plagued the river, and while efforts to clean it up are underway, Questions remain. What questions do you have about the White River? We'd love to hear from you. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana. We'll be back tomorrow at this time for that conversation. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.